This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of March 10th, 2005.
High police!
Bad cop. No donut.
Bad.
Cop.
No. Donut.
Because I'm the law, and I rule.
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after the headlines for a special report on the recent arrest and imminent deportation of CKLN's Wendy Maxwell. Wendy Maxwell was arrested at the discretion of Toronto police on Saturday on the campus of Ryerson University during an International Women's Day event. Later in this program, we'll tell you more about the arrest, listen to parts of an interview with Wendy Maxwell recorded Monday, and tell you what you can do to help. But first, let's take a look at what the police did to us this week. A police officer in Shrewsbury, Missouri, has been charged with sexually assaulting a 9-year-old boy. A report in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch says that the arrested officer, Corey Cranefuss, was active with DARE and other youth programs. The officer has been charged with 9 counts of statutory sodomy, 2 counts of first-degree child molestation, and third-degree assault. Police say the abuse has been ongoing for 2 years, since the victim was 7 years old, and that the abuse took place in the officer's home. After his arrest, Cranefuss was suspended without pay. A police officer in Tampa, Florida, was arrested and released from jail this week on a $50,000 bond after he was charged with molesting 2 9-year-old girls. According to Tampa Bay 10 News, the 20-year police veteran Ernesto Hughes was charged with lewd and lascivious molestation of the girls. According to the arrest affidavit, the officer is accused of reaching under the victim's clothes and touching their genitals. Hughes, who is at home since his release, has not commented on the charges. A police officer working in Middlesex, Pennsylvania, has been charged with forcing 3 women to have sex with him by threatening to have them charged for prostitution if they refused. An account in an Associated Press story says that Officer Kenny Johnson is currently on trial facing charges of rape, sexual assault, and obstruction of justice. One of the witnesses in the officer's trial has claimed that Johnson had sex with her over a 3-year period beginning in 1998 in the officer's squad car, at a police station, and in the officer's home. The officer claims that he was dating 2 of his 3 victims. A police officer in Cocoa, Florida, found himself under arrest this week after police raided an adult club and charged 9 people with sex crimes. According to WFTV, police were acting on complaints about illicit activity in the theater section of the business and arrested 9 people on charges ranging from exposing themselves to committing a variety of sex acts. Sergeant Jay Padgett of the University of Central Florida Police Department was among those arrested in the raid. A police officer in Sandwich, Massachusetts, has resigned from the force this week after being charged with soliciting sex from a minor on the internet. The Associated Press reports that Officer Michael Kaiko, who was assigned to work with school children, was accused of trying to solicit a New Jersey police officer who was posing online as a 14-year-old girl. He was suspended without pay on February 3rd and resigned on February 15th prior to a disciplinary hearing. The officer's trial will begin on July 18th. A police officer in Framingham, Massachusetts, was arrested last weekend after allegedly beating his girlfriend. The Metro West Daily News says that Officer Eduardo Rivera, a 12-year police veteran, was arrested and charged with domestic assault and battery after the victim's statement was given to officers responding to the disturbance. Rivera is on paid leave until an investigation of the incident is complete. 3 police officers in Milwaukee have been charged in connection with the beating of a man who was allegedly attacked by as many as 10 off-duty police officers outside of a party. Local media reports identify the 3 officers charged as John Bartlett, Daniel Masaryk, and Andrew Spengler. All were charged with substantial battery, Bartlett and Masaryk are charged with recklessly endangering safety, and Masaryk also faces a perjury charge. Witnesses to the beating say that 10 officers surrounded the man, kicking and beating him and accusing him of stealing a police badge. Witnesses also report that the attackers used racial slurs repeatedly during the beating. The investigation of the beating is not complete, and it is possible that other officers will be charged in the future. A report in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has detailed past troubled histories of two of the officers charged. Bartlett has been accused of using excessive force 3 times in his 5 years in the department, all against black men, one of whom was beaten fatally. Masaryk used a stun gun on 6 people within an 11-week period last year. Police in James City, Virginia, arrested an 8-year-old at his school this week and charged him with disorderly conduct and assault and battery. The Associated Press reports that the child was accused of an outburst during which he headbutted a teacher and kicked an assistant principal after they didn't allow him to go outside and play with the other students. After leading the child from the school in handcuffs and taking him to a police station, the child was released into the custody of his parents. The police chief in Pahokee, Florida, resigned this week over a case where his officers are accused of beating a man. According to a report filed by Associated Press, the mayor and several town councilors witnessed 3 officers beating the man by chance. The man who was beaten by officers had a history of videotaping police and offering suspects advice on how to deal with their arrests. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement has been asked to investigate the incident because the mayor of the town has no confidence in the local department's ability to investigate themselves. On past programs, we have told you about 3 police officers in Memphis, Tennessee, who were facing charges of conspiracy in a plot that involved an alleged planned robbery, drugs, and prostitution. One of the officers charged, John Vaughn, pleaded guilty to his charges last month. This week, the Memphis Press reports that Officer Billy Scott has also changed his plea to guilty on charges relating to his part in the conspiracy. He will be sentenced in March 2006. Scott was accused of recruiting Vaughn to help with a drug deal and then paying him $4,000. He was also accused of conspiring with another officer, David Tate, and Tate's girlfriend, April Veach, in a plan to commit a theft and possibly murder the person whose home they planned to rob. Veach pleaded guilty to her charges on the same week as Vaughn. Tate, the alleged ringleader, is the only one of the accused still facing a trial. A police officer from Grays Lake, Illinois, who was already facing an assortment of criminal and departmental charges, is now facing new criminal charges. According to the Chicago Daily Herald, Officer David Williams was charged with unlawful communication with a witness and harassment after he sent an email to another police officer who was going to testify against him. In February, Williams was charged with stealing $14,000 from the Grays Lake Fraternal Order of Police Lodge, selling a department-owned automatic rifle, giving away a portable breath tester belonging to the department, and filing false documents in an attempt to hide the theft. Williams resigned from the force about 1 week before the first charges were laid against him. 7 police officers in Apache Junction, Arizona, have been forced off the town's police force in the last 9 months. The Arizona Republic reports that the officers have left the force after being targeted in an investigation which lasted 2 years. The investigation looked at 45 separate allegations against officers. 2 reports from outside agencies which looked at the Apache Junction police force said they discovered a culture of sexual harassment and workplace abuse. Former police chief Robert Warner resigned in December 2003 after the first of the 2 reports. Since that time, 2 commanders, 3 sergeants, 1 patrolman, and 1 detective have left the force either through retirement or termination agreements. Commanders Dan Scott and Brian Duncan retired voluntarily after an inquest found evidence of sexual harassment, pornography, and other workplace misconduct. A former police officer in Miami was found guilty this week on charges of grand theft, conspiracy to commit grand theft, and 3 counts of official misconduct. A Miami Herald story says that Officer Wiebert Celestin planned with others to break up drug deals and keep the money for themselves. The others were undercover agents who were working to set up the officer. Celestin was caught on videotape pulling over a suspected drug dealer and taking $22,000 in cash. Two high-ranking officers in the Staunton, Massachusetts Police Department have been suspended this week after being charged with extortion, kidnapping, and assault and battery. The Enterprise reports that Chief Manuel Cachopa and Sergeant David Cohen were both placed on administrative leave a day after they were charged. The town's police department has been rocked by an investigation that continues to look at five of the force's other officers. A special prosecutor assigned to the probe has suggested that more charges against officers are likely to follow. Next up, a review of this week's Taser news.
I was strapped down on a bed, arms like this. He was on top of me with the taser. He was on top of me. He said, before he jumped on me, he said, I guess I got to do this the old-fashioned way.
How is that any different than if he had his billy club or his pepper spray or even his gun and held it to the guy's head and said, if you don't give me what I want, I will shoot you?
It's a great tool for law enforcement.
50,000 volts going through your body at that point, nothing you can do. I don't believe it was used appropriately. I wasn't threatening to him, and if he was concerned about his safety, he should have called for backup before using the taser.
It can save injury to officers and suspects, and use of force with the taser can now be deployed several feet away. As before the taser, officers would have to go hands-on.
There's a lack right now of independent peer-reviewed research.
59% of the cases where they were used, only a misdemeanor was charged. And in only 9 out of the 90 cases, or 10%, were weapons involved. So I think the police department needs to seriously review their policies related to the use of the taser.
A police officer in Cincinnati, Ohio, accidentally shot another officer with a taser this week during a struggle with a man who was wanted on several traffic warrants. On Sunday night, a man in DeLand, Florida, died after being shot by police with a stun gun. Police said that the man had told him that he had taken cocaine. Studies, including an Amnesty International report on stun gun use released last November, suggest that certain drugs, including cocaine and some prescription medications, are frequently a factor in deaths linked to taser use. A 15-year-old girl was tasered at her high school in Roseville, Minnesota last week after she returned to the school a day after being suspended and acted unruly. Police in Roseville schools have had access to the weapon for 1 month, but this was the first time one had been used. A lawsuit filed against stun gun manufacturer Taser International was dismissed this week. In June 2004, a Michigan man filed a suit against the company, claiming he was injured when he volunteered to be shocked at a Taser demonstration. Two police officers in Sweetwater, Florida, were suspended this week following an incident where an off-duty officer working as a security guard repeatedly shocked a bar patron with a stun gun. Last week, a police officer in Orlando, Florida, shocked a man twice with a taser after he refused to give a urine sample at a hospital. Officer Peter Leinenkamp used his stun gun despite the fact that his victim was strapped to a hospital bed and posed no danger to the officer or to anyone else. This week, a forensic engineer speaking at a conference of the American Academy of Forensic Examiners issued a warning that stun guns can cause delayed cardiac arrest and that injuries to both officers and suspects may be slipping past authorities undetected. Law enforcement agencies across North America are reconsidering the deployment of stun guns. Police departments in California, Georgia, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Utah, Florida, and North Carolina have chosen not to deploy tasers or delayed deployment, citing concerns about the safety of the weapon. Some agencies have expressed concern that children as young as 6 and adults as old as 82 are being shocked by police officers with 50,000 volts of electricity for offenses as trivial as refusing to pay for a salad at a restaurant. Other police departments in Portland, Oregon, and Toronto this week announced plans to arm more officers with the devices. The company which makes the stun guns used by North American Police Department's Arizona-based Taser International is standing by their claim that their weapons are not responsible for any deaths and do not cause heart attacks. Of the 18,000 police departments in the United States, 7,000 have tasers in use. Taser International claims that, so far, over 100,000 officers have been shocked by stun guns voluntarily during demonstrations of their products. Other than the killings already mentioned in this program, police also killed people this week in Houston, Texas, San Antonio, Texas, San Francisco, California, Oshawa, Ontario, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Delray Beach, Florida, and Portsmouth, Virginia. On Saturday, Toronto police arrested community activist and CKLN programmer Wendy Maxwell at an International Women's Day rally on the campus of Ryerson University. She was arrested on an immigration warrant, which was acted upon at the discretion of the Toronto Police Service. Although she filed an appeal of a deportation order over a year ago, this application does not prevent her from being deported from the country before her case is heard by immigration officials. There is a good chance that her appeal to remain in the country on humanitarian and compassionate grounds should be successful for several reasons. Wendy Maxwell will be deported to Costa Rica, where as a black lesbian she faces almost certain persecution. Also, she has been in Canada for over 7 years, and in that time has been extremely busy helping others through her community activism. She has worked with Street Life Support Services, the Black Coalition for AIDS Prevention, the Latin American Coalition to End Violence Against Women, and other organizations during her time in Toronto. Earlier this week, she was denied bail because a judge considered her a flight risk. She is currently being held at a jail in Milton, Ontario. Yesterday, we learned that Wendy Maxwell's deportation to Costa Rica is scheduled for Monday, March 14th. Next, we'll listen to excerpts from an interview with Wendy Maxwell from Monday when she spoke with CKLN's Kristen Schwartz.
Well, what basically happened is that I was finishing setting up the cookie, CKLN's cookie and t-shirt table at the fair, and two police officers who obviously already knew who I was walked up to me and looked at me and pointed to me and asked me to come over, and I said, come over, you come over. And they're like, no, come over, we want to ask you some questions. I walked down to them, already knew what it was all about. I walked down to them and I'm like, yes, and they started asking me, you know, my name and whatever. I said, well, I don't really need to answer any of these questions, you know, it's my right, right? And my reluctance to do that just caused them, they said, well, you're under arrest. And I'm like, well, what for? And they wouldn't say what I was under arrest for. And they cuffed me. And then I'm like, is everybody seeing this? I'm getting cuffed and nobody's telling me what am I arrested for. And it wasn't until after people started looking and there was this camera rolling and whatnot that they decided to say, well, okay, you have a Canada-wide warrant for your arrest. I'm like, okay. So they take me to the car, but I'm still like, I'm here screaming. I'm totally freaking. I'm like, please don't let them take me. Please don't let them take me. Like, I know what's going to happen now. Please don't let them take me. I'm going to die. And people out there were like, don't worry, we're going to call your lawyer. And there were some people, familiar faces, friends of mine who like, they knew who to call already and whatnot. The march was coming in. The International Women's Day march was coming in from OISE. And as they saw the women coming in, the police officers saw it prudent to turn around the corner. So they turned around the corner from the Girard Street entrance of Ryerson. So they were still within Ryerson campus, but they were around the corner in the street. So they were parked there for a good over half an hour. Parked there, calling me in, basically trying to verify the whole situation, telling them, well, we have someone in custody that was reported, da, da, da. We want to bring her in, and brought me back in over there at the station. At the station, though, well, I was cuffed, right? At the station, They took my jacket because, according to them, because it had strings and I could hang myself with the little beanie strings in it. And they took my my shoes. They took out the strings of my shoes and took my shoes because they said that I could throw those shoes in somebody's face. So here I was with a sleeveless top and walking on my socks in this cold floor. Put in a cell, waited until this immigration officer came in. And he says to me, well, because you're a bit rowdy and you resisted arrest, that's what they said, that I resisted arrest, you are going to be sent to the Vernier facility for women instead of the Comfort Inn. And I'm like, I never resisted arrest. I don't know what they're talking about. And he's like, well, the officer said that, and I'm inclined to go with what the officers are saying. And I'm like, you can go with whatever you want. I did not resist arrest. Never mind. On my way out, they're putting shackles on me, and I'm like, I'm freaking here. I'm like screaming at them. I'm like, excuse me, why are you putting, you please don't put those on. First I said, please do not put those on. And the guy is like, well, ma'am, I just need to do my job. I'm like, your job? 500 years my people have gone through this shit, and you still want to put us through that? No, you're not going to put the chuckles on. And he's still telling me that he's going to put the chuckles on. I'm like, what are you so afraid of? Why are you, what are you, am I going to run away from here? There's 10 police officers. There's a freaking detective in front of here. Where am I going to run to? Why do you need to put chuckles on? Like, why is there a necessity? Oh, well, regulations and like, regulations? I screamed at all of them. I'm like, you guys are afraid of the big black, bad black woman. You are afraid of the big bad black woman that is come here to break down the freaking system. That's what you're afraid of. You know, all of them, about 8 different, you know, police supervisors and chiefs and whatever bullshit they were. But whoever they were, their heads down, not one looked up to me to say nothing. Not one could lift up their eyes and look at me in the eye. Because they know it was bullshit what they were going on with anyways. So, yeah, as I was saying, well, that was the treatment back there. I mean, and all that process is one person during the transportation from the 51 precinct to a Vernier facility. There was one person that, you know, I felt was very, very supportive of me in a sense. Like, I don't really want to put her in evidence or anything, but there's a sister that came through, a police officer or whatever, that was very supportive, was supportive enough to, like, give me an eye of, like, make me feel that I wasn't alone at that moment, you know, and gave me strength. And I would like for her to know that I appreciate that, but at the same time, I don't want to put her in any jeopardy for her job or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, and then here, well, what can I say? I mean, I slept in a secluded, segregated area for a bit, and then they passed me over here, and here is, like, max security. I haven't seen the sun since I've been here. I haven't been outside this walls since I've been here. They tell you what to do, when to get up, when to eat, when to do anything, when to do your laundry, when to shower, you know. I just feel that a lot of these women could help, you know, could use a lot of help as well. But I also feel blessed of the fact that the help is there for me too. I feel incredibly helped and blessed. But I think I've been put here for a purpose, you know, and I vow to this. I definitely vow to this, that if a Canadian system, a Canadian government allows me to stay in Canada, I'm going to do outreach work for the women's jails, man. Because there's got to be something done. These women are in total isolation.
Mm-hmm. Do they get a lot of visits? Can you tell? Can you tell if women are getting visits? Like, do they make a lot of calls? Like, what's the...
You can make calls. You can make calls. You can receiving calls is a hard thing. You can receive calls from your lawyers though. but you can make calls, collect calls only. If you're going to receive a visit, it's like 2 days in advance. That 24 or 48 hours in advance that the request, the person that wants to visit needs to make a request. I mean, and when you come and see the visitor, when you go to your visitor, it's like it's a glass, it's across a glass only.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what to mean for having women in these conditions.
Yeah.
I don't understand what so much threat that they pose. Get searched 5 times a day and shit like that. Whenever they have to go from one place to another. I wrote a little piece today, and I was hoping to read it on the air if you didn't mind. Can I do that?
Please.
Okay. My dear friends, I fell in this pit, dug for me by envy. Didn't see it. It was covered by hypocrisy of hate. Hate with a familiar face. This is no joke. I'm in jail. Not guilty of a crime, but as a woman with no status, I'm treated as a criminal. What is a criminal, anyhow? I'm in a maximum security range. Met an inmate who stole food, 2 others that stood up to their husband's abuse. Some rob or sell drugs to survive. Please tell me, who is the criminal? Is it us in here? Or a system that put us in here? Who is the criminal? All I want is to be free. All I want is to be safe. I want the chance to raise my children in safety. The chance to build a better society for them. That is not much to ask, or is it? I'm in a maximum security range because I was not quiet or meek. I cried out to the troops coming in from the march, please don't let them take me back. Please don't let them send me back. I knew you would have my back, and so you did. In all my sisters, brothers, and allies out there, I find my strength. I'm standing strong on my book, on your backs. And on the backs of all those who came before me, because of you, change shall come. Because of you, I still have hope. I know for a fact that my time to die has not yet arrived. Tiko basi igilehin ogbamanwo. If defense is not prop, it will fall and collapse. Yoruba proverb. I just cooked up that in like 2 minutes now, in like the past hour. But yeah, what I can say for the most is like women's necessities, basic necessities are really denied. Like, black women need, for example, products for their skin, products for their hair. And in reality, per capita, there's more black women in here than there are any other race, right? And those rights are denied. Your friends and family cannot bring anything from outside, cannot bring nothing from the outside for you. If anything, they can bring money for you, and you can invest that money in a canteen, what they call a canteen, which is like a supply store or something that you submit a request to. So if you don't have the money in by a certain date, when the canteen comes through, you cannot get any stuff out, you know. Anybody wants to come visit you, it takes 2 days for the request to be processed. I don't know, it's crazy. That's all I gotta say, it's crazy. I mean, if it's not because of the constant support of my friends and the fact that I know that everybody out there is like really supportive of me and sending me positive vibes from the outside, I'll be going crazy in here. I'll be pulling my hair.
I would like to strongly urge everyone, particularly the Canadian listeners of this program, to support Wendy Maxwell by taking one or more of the following actions. Federal Immigration Minister Joe Volpe has the right to grant Wendy Maxwell a temporary residence permit so that she can remain in Canada until her appeal can be heard. please tell the minister to do so. He can be reached by phone at 416-781-5583 and 613-992-6361. Volpe can be faxed at 416-781-5586 and 613-992-9791. You can email him at minister@cic.gc.ca. The immigration enforcement officer who has the responsibility for Wendy Maxwell's case has the discretion to defer the impending deportation. Please ask him to do so. His name is Martin Kosicek, and he can be reached by phone at 905-405-3630 and by fax at 905-405-3529. Please act quickly to help stop this deportation. For more information, you can visit ocap.ca/Wendy for updates. That's all for this week. Tune into this station for more next week. Email your comments and story ideas to ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to everyone who sent articles for this week's show. From CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, I'm Ron Anisich. Each week we end Bad Cop No Donut with a song. This week it's Police Story by Anti-Flag.
Take it.